his son when we didn't deserve it. But our religious world stops there. With God's grace, we should make it our aim to please his son and our Savior, Jesus Christ. And that's where people get confused. They figure, well, it's all God's grace, so there's nothing for me. Absolutely, there's something for you. We've got to develop these characteristics that are set here. Yes, Joe. Right.
If you do these things, you'll
never fall. Absolutely.
Forget about that if we do all these things.
Right. And you tie that together with Hebrews 5:9, being made perfect, he is the author of eternal salvation to all them that obey him. Right. So you have those. But we look at this one, virtue. We did spend some time on that. That means moral excellence. I brought up last week, moral excellence or virtue, I believe in my mind, is doing the right thing when nobody's around. In other words, that's just your character. You're going to do the right thing. You don't have to do the right thing because somebody's watching you. And the best illustration I can have of that, in my opinion, if you look on the sheet there on virtue, I gave the occasion of Joseph in Genesis chapter 39, and you can actually take it verses 9 through 12. Now, we're not going to go to Genesis 39, but we're all familiar where Joseph was being seduced by Potiphar's wife. And as you read verses 9 through 12, daily she would try to entice him, and he would constantly refuse, "How can I sin against God?" Well, there happened to be one occasion where it just had to happen to be her and him. They were alone. There was nobody else. Now, he had virtue. He had moral excellence. When she tried to grab him under that circumstance, he ran. Again, here's a situation. Moral excellence is doing that which is right, regardless on who or who is not there. It's doing the right thing at all times. Does anybody else want to add to that before I go on? All right. And that's a quality. We really see whether or not we have it is when we're put in difficult situations. You know, I can know whether or not I have virtue, not because I talk about it, but whether and when I'm in a circumstance, do I have the virtue? I read, and I don't know anything about golf, but I read about a golfer many years ago, a professional golfer, and they made a mistake on his scorecard by one stroke, and it was missed, totally missed. I forget the golfer's name. This was a pro golfer. And when he saw it at the end of the round, he identified this was not right. You have to add one more stroke. According to what I read, he lost the tournament. Now, I don't know how much money he lost, but here's another case of virtue. He saw the situation. Nobody caught it. He could have what? Just go on. That wasn't my mistake. That was somebody else. No, virtue is, if you have got moral excellence, you're going to do the right thing regardless of who else might be involved. Yes?
Everybody's had this happen to them. People give the wrong change.
Okay. And how do people respond when you give it back? Sometimes they want to argue. But that's a good point. That's another a lighter case, but that's another case of virtue. Somebody gives you the wrong change. And sometimes it's not just change. Sometimes it's dollars. You know, you gave them 20, and somehow in their mind they thought you've given them a 50, and they give you change for a 50 instead of a 20. Virtue is, hey, you've given me too much. Trouble is, you're probably going to have to argue with them as you give it back. But that's what virtue is all about. That's a good one. Thank you. Why didn't you tell me that before class? So I could have said, look at this good illustration I have. No, that. Anybody else? Did you have your hand up there, Daryl? Good point.
Now, being virtuous towards God, it's always going to be in our best interest because we want to do it with God. But in terms of the world, sometimes we have to do things or have a conversation with somebody where it's just not comfortable, not easy, and it'd be so much easier just to walk on by and let it go. But if you really are a virtuous person, you'll do what's right.
Excellent. I never even thought from that angle, but that's a whole new study right there. Now, that Everybody agrees with that, right? That's another area of virtue. That's why we have a Bible class. Nobody has all the answers. We share our ideas, and then they come together as one. So that's a good one. And that does happen frequently if you're in the work world or if you're dealing with people a lot of the times. So we need to develop virtue. And again, I don't believe this list is a combining you did this and then you did this. I think we try to develop on all of these at all times. So it's not, okay, I've gotten virtue down pat. I don't know if we'll ever have virtue down pat completely. We keep on working on it. But then we come to the next one, knowledge. And of course, for us today, it's a little bit easier because we've got the completed Bible. At that time, they didn't have the completed. They had some letters circulating, but they didn't have the completed Bible. But knowledge is very important. Let's go to these passages, Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. David and Beck, we haven't used you, so you've been gone gallivanting all over the country, so you want to, and he's been worshiping. I don't want to leave the impression that he is. You want to read Romans 12, 1 and 2 with us, for us, please. Okay, so the key is the renewing of your mind. And of course, we renew our mind by the standard of faith, the scriptures. Do we agree? Are we all in agreement there? Now we talk about it, but it's going to take what to do it? It's going to take work. It's going to take effort. It doesn't talk about thinking about renewing your mind. It discusses renewing your mind. In fact, let's go to these other passages. Colossians chapter 1, Ruth, you want to read that one, verses 9 and 10. Okay, and increasing in the knowledge of God. Before I comment on that passage, let's read the third passage. Stephen, you want to read that third passage that we have in that box, and that is Philippians chapter 1 and verse 9. All right. Again, talking about knowledge. And we could multiply this with many other New Testament passages, correct, on the idea of knowledge. But the bottom line with whatever passages we go to, it takes effort on my part individually. And I'll tell you what, sometimes it takes a lot of effort, and you're scratching your head on some occasions. Because, like, for instance, if you're studying the book of Revelation, now, I believe the book can be understood that God wins. In fact, I'm working to listen. God wins. But there's a lot of things in the Revelation that are signs and symbols, and you got to be careful that you don't mistranslate that sign and symbol. The point is, if we understand the other books, then we'll get a grasp on the general tenor of that book. But it takes effort. It takes study. And not only in that book, you have other books. There are some passages that are harder to understand. Would we agree? Now, that's not true in the whole Bible, but there are some passages hard to understand. When I study the Old Testament, there's so many questions I have. Not that God has not been sufficient revealing what he wanted to reveal, but my inquisitive mind wants to go further. Why did he allow this? Why did this time frame? Why, you know, and it just goes on. So we have to just take those, what he's revealed to us, but it's accumulation of things. It's not like when I was a young man, my worst class was history. Now I like history now, but back then I hated history. Now back then, I'm showing my age now, we had tape recorders. You remember tape recorders, reel to reel, you had the little tape. It was not cassette players, tape recorders. So I thought, I'm going to get really smart. I'm going to tape the chapter, and then I'm going to have that playing while I'm sleeping. So I had the tape going near my head while I'm sleeping. That didn't help. What helped is for me reading the chapter on tape before I was sleeping. That's what helped. It didn't help. That wouldn't that be nice if we could just put our Bibles under our pillow at night and we woke up and we had the knowledge? It don't work like that. You got to put forth the effort. Now, thank be to God, He's given us His Word. We can grow, but it's up to us. Just like I'm glad I can teach and preach, but I don't want anybody just simply following what I say. You need to examine it to be so and then make it your own. I believe you had your hand up, Daryl, or did I miss that?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead. I'm sure you got something to add to that. Yes.
There's no way for us to know that we're being misled by others. And there's plenty of people that are going to try to mislead us. It's happened all over the world. And the reason for that is because people don't know the Bible. If they knew the Bible, and I'm not saying you have to be able to instantly quote a scripture every minute, but when you hear somebody that's teaching something that's totally different than what the Bible teaches, it should, something inside you should say, that doesn't sound like what I've read. Doesn't sound like what I've read. And go back and study on. And with enough time to bow, you can pick out the false teachers pretty quick.
It's funny he brought that up because yesterday, and I'm not making this up, yesterday as I'm driving home, remember a couple of weeks ago, gave a lesson on once saved, always saved, how that's not a true doctrine. He used one of the passages I said, that no one can pluck my sheep out of my hands. Well, that's true. No one can take the sheep, but can the sheep jump over the fence? Yeah, and that's where we've got to be careful of. So again, we're going to be a sheep as long as we know the shepherd, as long as we follow the shepherd. Very important. And we're all at different levels of growth. First of all, our growth is not simply to impress others. Our growth is to be better Christians. That's number one. I hope that there's nothing wrong with quoting passages, but those passages you're quoting, can you live them? You see, those are two different things. I know young kids, they sometimes see how many passages they can quote. And I tell you, young people have got sharp brains. They can quote a lot. That's good. Nothing wrong with that. Now the challenge, will I put that into practice? And that's really what knowledge is all about, is by putting it into practice, not simply I can go here and say this. Now, when we talk about knowledge, there's a few additional passages I want to use, or one additional on that one. Let's go to Proverbs 18:15. And who has the New American Standard? Sue, you use that, don't you? I should know that after 50 years of marriage. Does anyone have the English Standard Version? Okay. So we're going to first use the New American Standard and then the English Standard. Okay, so go on. New American Standard, Susan. 18, Proverbs 18, verse 15.
The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge.
Okay, now the English Standard Version.
An intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge.
Okay, so if I want to be intelligent, and I want to be wise, what should I be going after? Knowledge, and more specifically, God's knowledge. Now, here's the problem with a lot of religious people, and I'm not making fun of them. They are truly religious, but instead of basing their primary focus on the Bible, they go to religious bookstores and get books written about different things, and they spend more time on those books than they do the Bible. That can be dangerous. Spend the bulk, now I've got a lot of other books, don't misunderstand me, but spend the bulk of your time on what? The Bible. Don't go to another book to decide to you what you need to believe. And people do that, do they not? And that's the scary part. Yes, David.
I've talked to people that have said, now, does your preacher have a PhD, does he have a master's from so-and-so college or university or something, thinking that if he doesn't have that, then he has no knowledge. And that's just, like you said, that's false. And you got to have knowledge of the Word of God, not some man's knowledge that you gain wisdom or knowledge.
Right. And you really want to discourage him and say, no, before that he was a forklift operator. That'll be impressive. They'll want to come and see, what in the world, what kind of buffoon do you have up there? I've got to go check it out. But the point is to have knowledge of God's Word first and foremost. Don't take me wrong. That includes my brethren who write books. I'm glad brethren write books. I'm happy about that. But they're human beings just like you and I. And can they go off base on some things? Absolutely. So I'm not suggesting you shouldn't buy a book from a brother who writes a book. For instance, I've got a number of books in my library who's now deceased by Homer Haley. I never met the man personally, but he was extremely intelligent. And most of the things I read about him, I appreciate how he has explained them. I'm not going to get in specifics. I'm not going to deal with a deceased man. But there are some things, areas I disagree totally with him. I learned about premillennialism by a man I never met, Foy Wallace. Foy Wallace was a spiritual giant in years gone by. I say spiritual giant. He was extremely knowledgeable of the Scriptures. And he took a firm stand against premillennialism. And to me, it's one of the best writings about premillennialism there is. Now, again, like every other human being, there's other areas he went off into a tangent that I didn't agree with. He wrote a book of Revelation. I've got his commentary. I seldom use it because he takes the 70 AD position. I take the 98 AD position. So you've got a difference there. So I learn from these books, but these books don't tell me what to believe. Does that make sense to you? You can learn from, whether it be brother or not brother. Years ago, someone had said, and thank goodness they changed the name of their church building, but all of us heard the name Max Lucado. Now, at one time, Max Lucado was a part of a highly liberal congregation in the South. Now, right now, they've changed the name of the congregation and everything. But someone said, oh, you're a part of Max's church. I said, absolutely not. Now, has he written some material that is worth some? Yeah. Like anybody else, yes. I'm not going to say everything he's written is garbage. But the point is, everything he's written is not right either. I mean, not all the things he's written is right. I think people, religious people, think if they walk into a religious bookstore, God's given the stamp of approval that's on every book that's in that store. False. And not only in the religious bookstore, you can go to Florida College bookstore, and not every book in there is 100% approved by God. False. Or whatever other religious store. Again, what book is the only book that we can have confidence in? The Bible. The Bible. Anybody have their hands up? So there's that. So we have to increase in knowledge. And that comes at a slow and steady pace. And comes at consistency. Yes, James.
Knowledge is great, but you have to have wisdom.
All right, James, I agree. And when we talk about wisdom with that knowledge, how do we distinguish the two?
There's three places in six to eight places, maybe nine in Proverbs, where he groups three words together: knowledge, understanding, and wisdom.
Okay.
So without understanding, the knowledge means nothing. I can teach a dog to do tricks, but that dog doesn't understand. Except they'll get a treat afterwards. But you have knowledge, then you have understanding, then you have the understanding, then you can apply it in your life in terms of gaining wisdom.
That's the third one I agree with. The third one is applying it into your life. You've taken what you've learned, and now you're making application of it. Does that make sense? Can I have the knowledge and have no application? So you are right. You can have a lot of knowledge, But if I'm not putting that knowledge into application, am I doing much good? For instance, if I've got a lot of knowledge of the plan of salvation, which we should have, I've got to have the wisdom on how to use that when I teach my neighbor. Does that make sense? If I just flat out say to my neighbor down the street, well, if you haven't been baptized for the remission of your sins, you're going to hell. Now, what have I done? I've closed the door. Maybe they have a complete misunderstanding of baptism. So I've got to sit down in wisdom. I have to conclude in my mind where I think they are and how I'm going to get them from point A to point B. And that's why there's no two people alike. There's no two people that are going to be taught alike. What is your first name again?
Rodney.
Rodney. Yeah. Okay, now I feel bad, but I would ask you, do you know everybody's name? So give me time. Okay, so Rodney's with us. All right, you had your hand up. Okay. I'll agree.
You got these people in universities with PhDs, they're book smart, but they haven't been out there, they haven't applied this stuff, they hasn't been used it, you know.
Okay.
They don't have the experience.
Daryl. Yeah.
But they were fools. They knew God, but they refused to accept that God was the authority.
Okay, and that's...
After what David's comment was to us, PhDs, what does that mean?
And that's a good point. And we're not going to go on to this topic. I'm just going to throw this out. It takes more faith to be an atheist than it does to be a Christian. And I'm just going to leave that. Maybe I'll preach on that down the road. And the reason is you got to accept by faith one or the other. I believe intelligence started everything, and that intelligence is the God of the Bible. They believe it came from just matter, combustion, and by a process of billions of years. And I like the time frame they use because they're just picking things out of the air when they're doing the time frame. But very good. Anybody else before we move on? Next one. And then to knowledge, we have self-control. I like that one. Would you agree that all of us in this audience have self-control in some areas?
No doubt.
Huh?
No doubt about it.
Okay. We all have self-control in some areas. Would we agree? But there are areas in our life where we have to struggle to maintain self-control. Would you agree there? And see, that's the thing. So as we look at self-control, let's read that little section there. Jerry, you want to read that for me?
Self-control, the virtue of one who masters his desires and passes, especially the sensual appetites. Remember this, temperate in all things, and in a whole bunch of...
Okay, and there's the thing. In Corinthians, as he talks about running the race, he said the person who runs that race is temperate, and that's the word we use, self-control, that he's temperate, self-controlled in all things. And I gave us a few. Self-controlled in our time. How often do we waste time? Raise your hand if you've ever wasted time. Okay, we need to work on that. I'm not saying we're going to become perfectionists at that, but we do need to work on that. I learned that when I first became accustomed with using the computer along with my Bible and my studies. You know, you can go look something up, and what you spent, we're going to spend 10 minutes doing, you ended up spending an hour. And guess what? You can't bring that hour back. Or you went from that and then it veered off to a next topic and veered off to a next topic, and before you know it, you're going to bed and you really haven't accomplished anything. So you, when I go to the internet to get some answers on things, I've got to be self-disciplined what I'm looking for once I found what I need to move on then. I can't go off into all these other tangents. Now, it's not only in the studying, it's our time and all the things. You have no more time than I have. What you do with your time, now, some of you have secular jobs. So already, a portion of your time is geared at that job because you have to make a living so you can provide for your families, correct? So for some people, it's 40 to 50 hours a week has already been iced off on their time. There's time, like you said, that we come together here. You know, I've got it circled on Wednesdays. I'm not going to schedule anything because on Wednesdays I'm going to be with the Lord's people. Now, it's funny. I worked with a congregation for 20 years, 25 years, that they met on Tuesdays. So you had Tuesdays. I didn't circle Wednesday, but I circled Tuesdays. There's another congregation where a friend of mine preaches. They meet on Thursdays. So again, I didn't circle Wednesday because that, I circled Wednesday because the congregation I'm a part of, that's the day we meet for Wednesday Bible class. So that time circled off. On Sundays, I circle off basically the whole day because we meet Sunday morning and Sunday night. Now, there are some congregations, not going to go into detail in this, does not make them more or less spiritual, that meet once on Sundays. That is totally up to the congregation. That's the autonomy of the church. So that doesn't make them more spiritual or less spiritual. Doesn't make us more spiritual or less spiritual. It's still the first day of the week. So, you know, you can have your personal convictions on that, but it's not gregarious. So what I'm trying to say there, depending upon what congregation of you're in, then your time is, to me, that's already been scheduled, you know. But when it comes back to knowledge, knowledge is going to take what? Time. It's going to take time. And if all you devote, and it's none of my business how much time you devote, but if all you devote is Sunday class and Wednesday class, you're not using enough time. You're not using enough time. You need to change your habits a little bit. And you say, well, what should I study? Okay. You've got Sunday class. You got Wednesday class. You can go over some of the past sermons. In fact, if you need something to study, I'm sure the elders can set up a plan, something for you to study. If you don't know the plan of salvation, you can study that. You want to study the prophets, study the prophets. You want to study deity, study. I mean, there's different topics above and beyond. There, to me, that is the least problem, what should I study? The time involved. So what time am I going to involve to? And you've got to be consistent. I think most Christians, and I truly believe this, I think most Christians intend to do the right thing. Agreed? But time gets away from us. It slips through our fingers. And what I say, let you know, try to do better. There are some days I do real good. There's other days I'm not too happy with myself. That somehow I got sidetracked. Now, if I got sidetracked, I can't blame anyone else but who? But me. Unless, of course, it's a medical situation, then that's a whole different situation. But not only time, we've got to be self-controlled in our tongue. Let's go to James 1:26, and again, we could spend all night on this. James chapter 1 and verse 26. Paula, when we all get there, you want to read that for us, please? James 1:26. That's pretty serious, isn't it? If I don't bridle my own tongue, my religion's what? Vain. Useless. Can people get you upset? And if you say no, whoever gave me the invitation, come up forward for the line, because you're lying to yourself. Living with people, people can... I know unintentionally I sometimes upset people. We have to watch our tongue. It's not that we can't respond. It's that I have to be self-controlled in how I respond. Correct? Now, women make it even more difficult. Here, I'm going to get myself in trouble with my tongue. Women make it more difficult is not only how you respond, but what tone of voice you respond in. You could respond with the right answer, but if a woman doesn't think it's the right tone of voice, now you're in trouble. So again, when I approach a woman, my wife, or not only how I respond, but what's the means, what's the tone of my response? Because I can respond with what needs to be responded, but it's maybe the wrong way, correct? So again, but that's not only your wife or your children or your parents or your grandparents. We have to deal with the person at the store. We have to deal, and I love Publix. I go to Publix every day. Every day I go to Publix. When I get done exercising, my next stop is Publix and my next stop is home. So it's exercise, Publix, home. And they goofed me up because they closed my Publix, but there's another one I go to. But the point is, you're going to meet some people in there that are real good people. You're going to become across some people that you just really want to lash out, and you got to be careful you don't lash out. Now, more than Publix, it's when I have to return something. You ever have to return something to a store? Watch your tongue. Watch your tongue. The employee who takes their turn might be a good person. The employee who takes their turn might be a buffoon. You have to take that into consideration. I don't call them a buffoon, but in my mind, sometimes it can be a buffoon. So I have to respond appropriately. I have to be careful I don't become the buffoon. So the tongue, we have to watch our tongues with one another. Sometimes we become overly casual that we say something. Have you ever said something you wished you hadn't said? Okay. And you probably will in the future from time to time. Learn from that. You know, learn from that. My good friend, I think I told you, we went to a congregation, visiting the congregation, and we don't know the people there, so the best time is to be very cautious when you don't know the people. Came across a lady in her early 30s, kind of hefty, and my friend, I don't know what provoked him to say it because we didn't know anybody there. How many months are you pregnant? Guess what? She was not pregnant. How do you get over that one? Okay, so you have the tongue. Again, you have the temper and fleshly lust. So we all dealt with the temper before, but let's talk about fleshly lust. When you go into the watery grave of baptism, raised to walk in newness of life, guess what's still going to be out there? Fleshly lust. And you know what I've learned? Your fleshly lusts when you're 30 are different than your fleshly lusts when you're in your 60s. But guess what's still there? Fleshly lusts, right? And that we have to watch out for that. We have to follow 1 Peter 2 and verse 11. Let's go to that passage. That's a very important passage. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. James, you want to read that one for us when you get there, please? Yes, sir.
Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against your soul.
See, fleshly lusts are not simply only from the sexual realm, although that would be included for sure. Fleshly lust could be pride. Could that be a fleshly lust? Fleshly lust could be self, you know, self. Live putting self on a pedestal. Fleshly lust could be a whole host of things, you know, to put ourselves above. We have to watch out for that. People, you know, when people are wrong, got to watch out for fleshly lusts, as brethren sometimes are wrong. Because we'll say, I was wrong, but. The but is the fleshly lust. In other words, the but, what are we doing with the but? We're given a means of justification as to why we did that, right? We need to be like David. Remember what David did? I have sinned. Did he ever mention Bathsheba when he said that? Now, that woman was bathing on the rooftop. Well, maybe that's where she always bathed. I don't know. Again, he didn't focus to Bathsheba. I have sinned. He recognized what he had done. It's kind of like when you get your child and they've done something wrong. I did wrong, but then they talk about what their friends, right? They were moved by their friends to do that. Yeah, everybody's doing it. So we have to watch out for that. And I got two passages before we close this evening on flesh. Let's go to Proverbs 16, 32. Proverbs 16 and verse 32. Okay. Ken, would you read that one for us, please? Proverbs 16, 32. And Sherman, while he's getting ready with that, you get Proverbs 25, 28. So we're at Proverbs 16, 32. Notice, it didn't say he who is never angry. Does your Bible say he who is never angry? No. He who is slow to anger. Are there times we have a right to be angry? Absolutely. But there's never a time we have the right to do that which is wrong. There's the That's why you want to be slow to anger. Okay, go ahead, Sherman. He's reading Proverbs 25 and verse 28. What happens if you don't have rule over your own spirit? You're broken down. You're damaged. That's why when someone tells me, well, Chuck, I'm just warning you, I say, I don't think before I speak. Well, you got to start working on that. You don't get carte blanche freedom because you told me that. What you've told me, you realize you've got a problem, my solution, okay, work on that problem. May it take the rest of your life to work on it? Absolutely. But I'll never forget the sister who told me that when I went to Bridgeview many years ago. Brother Cousins, I just want you to know ahead. First week I'm there. I just want you to know ahead of time. I just speak what I think. And I pulled her to the side the next week. I said, well, I appreciate your honesty, but that's a problem you're going to have to work on. I think that coupled with other things, I was there for 25 years, and I think for 25 years she thought I was her enemy. Now, I don't think that was the only thing, but because she would speak before she thought. And that would create problems. And those problems could have been... Now, we've all done it on occasion. Most of us have done it on occasions. But we need to learn from that. I have never regretted not saying something in the heat of an argument. Because in the heat of the argument, oftentimes I could say something I don't want. You get the last comment, Daryl.
I was just going to say, the end of that verse, it says it's broken down, but it says without walls. You're defenseless.
Okay, that's a good point. That's exactly. There you go. And he knows what areas you're weak at, and that's where it goes. So next week, we're going to, believe it or not, start page 27. We're moving on slowly. Page number 27 next week.